So we all are expressing our zeal in coming to sit and be silent and be still for a period of time with ourselves and with each other. And it's a sign of having cultivated good practice to have zeal emerge. And like I said, even under difficult conditions. So this is a special time. We are midway between the solstice and the new year. And we have a particular way of celebrating this time in the West. We eat a lot. We shop a lot. We move around a lot. And then we have questionable reunions. But in the East, especially in Southeast Asia, they have very interesting rituals or respectfulness dedicated to this time of the year. In Thailand, for example, they have a 24-hour period between the last day of the last year and the first day of the next year, which is called a no day. A 24-hour period, which is not something that dwells in our normal understanding of time or the calendar or the cycle of 365 days. So their year has 364 days. And the 365th day is kind of unhinged. You can be somebody different. You can hang out with different people. You can let go of regular things that happen in your life. You can just get off the time grid. And in Southeast Asia, Laos, Thailand, Vietnam, Cambodia, Burma, this period is generally seen as having the duration, possibly the duration of a whole month. And people who are devoted and have the zeal for practice there can take a month long of what's called the rains retreats. And now we understand what it's like to be in the rains and why some people might opt to take that time to spend 30 days in silence and in stillness when there's not very much you can do outside. So you go inside. Now, in some traditions, this time of year is called the Uroboric period. So that's a fancy Greek word which means the belly button. This is the belly button that things manifest from for the next year cycle. And the visual image is a little bit like a donut with a very, very narrow hole in the center. And time pours out of that center and rolls around and then returns back to that center. So in that way, it is the belly button of the manifestation of a year. But in all these situations, what is common amongst them is the understanding that this is a period of gestation. It is a time of going inside with the idea of gestating for the sake of renewal or rebirth. I prefer renewal, and in the Buddhist context to say rebirth has implications that aren't really appropriate for this moment. So it is definitely a time of renewal. And the light renews itself too. There's more ears listening than we know. So in that renewal phase, what does this have to do with the actual practice of sitting? What is renewing about sitting? Why does it take us, and how does it take us back to what we could call a gestation period. Now, in Chinese Buddhism, there is a specific directive in the practice. When we allow our minds to be very, very, very collected, what we call the concentration practice, the shamatha practice, we stop. We stop the flow of thought. And in stopping the flow of thought, we stop the flow of the body's reactivity to our thoughts. And in stopping the body's reactivity, we slow down the thoughts. And in slowing down the thoughts, we reduce the reactivity. So it's a positive cycle of coming to a slowing down process. And in the Chinese meditation, Buddhist meditation tradition, they specifically describe that if we slow down enough, if we practice enough, watching our breath is very, very enlightening, because we notice, and I know we've all had this experience, that our breathing slows down so much that sometimes it tends to disappear. Or you wonder, when is that next breath going to arise? And it's a very, very, very subtle and unique experience compared to our constant, continual round of repeated breathing. And in the Chinese Buddhist tradition, it is encouraged, and you do come to a place where the breath is either so slow and so subtle that it feels like it's gone away, it's stopped, or in fact it has stopped. And in the Buddhist tradition, in alignment with the Chinese medical tradition, there is the understanding that when the body is in a very, very relaxed state, it can breathe through the pores. The breathing cycle transforms and takes us back to what's called the seed principle, the seed of our being, which is when we were in the uterus, when we were just a zygote, even before we were an embryo. And as we develop, we really don't have to breathe, obviously, using our lungs. And we don't have a lot of sensation that is differentiated between the brain and the body. So we are just a kind of experience of embodiment. And Dan Siegel, a wonderful neuropsychologist, reminds us repeatedly that the brain is embodied. It might be housed in the skull, but it networks all the way through our entire physiology. So when we come to sit and cultivate this stopping, this intentional simplifying with attention on the breathing, we slow down all the physical processes that make our body excited and restless and needing to move continually. And an excited, restless, continually moving body generates restlessness in the mind because it's uncomfortable. It's agitated. It always is in a state of generating some kind of something to grasp, to resolve, to find a solution to count. There's always some restlessness in the body that evokes restlessness and urgency in the mind. And we are forever mentally chasing solutions with our thoughts, when really what we can do is create resolution in quieting the physical body. And when we quiet the physical body, we are in a state that we could say is a gestation period. It's not really conditioned by everything that has come before. and it's not necessarily making plans or rushing towards what is going to follow. It is simply resting and being present. Now, this doesn't mean that when we are present, we are disconnected from everything that has conditioned us, and that it will not continue a thread of conditioning or infinite threads of conditioning into the future. It simply means that we have an orientation that is cooler, that is less agitated, and that can look more deeply into what it is that we want to achieve, what conflicts we want to resolve, what discomforts we want to ease. We can be more effective at living wisely. Now, even a zygote has the infinite causes and conditions of all the genetics that have preceded it from the sperm and from the egg. And that precedence is all the way to the beginning of time, even though it's been selective. So even a zygote is under 100% saturated influence of conditions. And as we develop in the gestation period, we come to a place where we are a neural network. Our nervous system is set up, and we have physiology. We have flesh, we have skin, we have organs. And there is a relationship between the brain and all the cellular physiology that is not yet divided, that is not as distinct. And our experience is a unified field experience. But as we get born and begin to interact, becoming breathing little creatures, having interaction with ourselves and the air, ourselves and other people, ourselves and culture, we get very, very, very profoundly conditioned. And we'd like to identify with that and call it who we are. And we struggle with it all of the time. And it causes so much suffering. Even at those times when we feel we're achieving the very things that we have sought out to achieve, even the times when we are loving the things that we want to love, even the times when we are in deep comfort or joy, the fact that it is not substantial, that it is not long-lasting, the seed of that understanding is implanted in every pleasurable experience. So, in that sense, the restlessness, the agitation, the suffering, if you will, is already a contact point, even in the heart of happiness. But when we come to practice, when we notice the zeal, and it brings us to this practice, we take the opportunity to cut the flow of that constant conditioned impact, so that we come very, very, very close to tracing back all the way to the experience of simply being a unified field of being, quiet, still. And in that stillness is the potential for renewal. That is virtually the only place, the only time that we experience the potential for renewal. We cut the flow of those conditioned impulses. And even though we don't totally destroy our karma, we have a different attitude towards it when we re-enter life with our eyes open, our ears open, our willingness to engage with others and to be present in the world. Being influenced by the mindfulness that we cultivate. Being balanced by the center that we have discovered and deepened and rooted, whose roots we feed every time that we meditate. So our only hope for being renewed is to stop. And that is really the effectiveness of meditation, because when we cultivate that more and more and more, we can be more insightful and wise and correct in our responses and our behaviors. But more than that, in the meditation tradition, we cannot practice true insight. We cannot investigate into the nature of our experience, whatever it is, until we have cultivated some deep level of that calm, concentrated, non-reactive seeing into what is really going on, what is really happening. Because the conditions that we bring to the situation when our mind and body have been quieted are the conditions of insight, energy, wisdom, and equanimity. Be more balanced. We can see more deeply. And when we see more deeply, we can disconnect those elements of suffering that are involved, that engage us, that imprison us, in feeding and recycling the same conditions into a deeper circuit. So not only is there the opportunity for renewal, there is the opportunity for rebirth. We can rebirth our experience, ourselves, in the experience of being alive, into new patterns, new relationships with ourselves, with all the elements of what makes up what we call the self. And in that way, we can actually step forward into the new year with a sense of freshness, with a sense of welcoming, and with a real understanding that change can happen within ourselves and between each other, where it counts the most. Because we're not simply recycling tighter and tighter circuits of what we've already experienced and explored, even though sometimes it shows up in new guises. Even a brand new car becomes a regular old car after 3 or 4 years. Even a brand new relationship becomes the same old issues after a while. Even a brand new house is going to need a new roof at some point. And even a brand new baby grows up and becomes a teenager. So we want to be able to create this renewal and rebirth on a track that doesn't repeat what we already know, just in new guises. We want to be able to take our attention to the seed, to the core, where we can really temper the body and the mind's excitation about being in the middle of this world. And as you know, there's so much stimulus going on. How could we not get excited all of the time? And by excitement, I don't mean that rah-rah thing. I mean that continual urgent, moving, restless, static that happens almost all the time that we run away from, you know. But if we turn off the TV, if we have a day when we don't have anything scheduled, if it's too rainy to go out and putter around in the garden and the TV is dead and everybody has left town and your iPhone is lost, all of a sudden there's nothing to do. And that's when we encounter how excited, how agitated, how restless. And if we look into it more deeply, we understand that it's really a form of suffering. We're just not leaving ourselves alone. We're not just being. So we can cut through that cycle, agitated body, agitated mind. Just going into narrower and narrower and narrower coils by simply practicing cutting it every time that we remember, whether we're on a cushion doing it for 45 minutes or out on the street and all of a sudden there's that little spark, that little spontaneous, wakeful moment that arises. Because it has been cultivated on the cushion enough, or because you're just a lucky person. It arises and it happens, or you remember, you feel your body getting really tight, you feel your mind getting really, really busy, and you feel yourself engendering this horrific internal experience. And you remember in the midst of it, wait a minute, I've got a choice. I can stop this for this moment. Come into this wonderful place that exists at the heart of every experience. This wonderful stillness. It's so accessible. It's so easy. It's so immediate. So being that we are anticipating the new year, and one of the things that we do in the new year is make resolutions, and knowing that we're scurrilous Buddhists who don't like rules and regulations and resolutions, but on the other hand, having the zeal to cultivate the intention to dedicate and commit ourselves to waking up in the middle of any experience for the whole rest of the year. Remembering, in the middle of crossing the street, in the middle of a disturbing email, in the middle of watching the news, in the middle of some physical pain, remembering, I can stop this and just be present. Calm my mind, calm my body. Renew and start again. So if we can make that resolve to cultivate this just a little more often, I can assure you that the year will go more smoothly. We will feel more joy, more energy, more equanimity, more wisdom. We'll look into things and have more insight. And maybe we'll even be better looking for worrying less. So that's my resolution and my intention and my hopes for you and for all of us and for the whole planet. to take the time regularly to just stop. Okay. We have a few minutes. We can just sit quietly and be stopped. Or if there's anybody who has the zeal to share some feelings, some insights, or some questions, that's fine too. It is truly a lovely thing to just be still and quiet, isn't it? And having arrived at that state, one is reluctant to move from it. That's why I'm always amazed at how easily we run away from it. But once being here, we can't help but appreciate how delightful and how nourishing how infused it is with a sense of well-being, a sense of well-being we rarely experience unless we're doing just this. So it's good to remember that this sense of well-being is not conditioned by anything. It's supported by the fact that it's a little warm and dry in here, supported by whatever looseness and stability your body experiences while just being in this position, whatever, however you practice this position. But other than that, there's really nothing else that conditions a state of well-being. It's just where we arrive when we stop.
Interesting to note how unreal these sources of agitation and suffering really are. You can't really locate them in the body, but you can't really point to them anymore. But yet they arise. Another part of what we ordinarily take for mind.
It's another part of what we ordinarily take for mind. Is that what you said? Yeah. Well, sometimes you can pinpoint some element. I mean, if you have a headache, you can pinpoint that discomfort, or if your knees hurt or your back hurts, or, you know, or somebody has slapped you, or something that you wanted very desperately hasn't come about. I mean, but there's an underlying quality of agitation, which is conditioned by all these particular particular desires and frustrations. And it is fed, it's kind of like an underground sea. It is fed continually and then resides in our subconscious being on a full-time basis. And that is actually what is impacted when we meditate. That is when we meditate in the concentration meditation before we cultivate investigation or insight, when we simply bring our attention back, what we're impacting is that underlying sea of agitation which has accumulated over a long time. And another thing that you could say is that what we're impacting is our nervous system. So there is a physiological effect that practice has and that neurologists are discovering. And at first what they saw was that there was an effect on the amygdala, on the limbic system in the brain. And as they continued to do more and more research, they discover that it has impact on the whole nervous system as it extends throughout the whole entire body. And that there is not a difference, really. There are designated specialties, but that it's really one flow of connected synaptic material. So, yeah. So that part of it you can't put your finger on what that agitation is, but you can feel it in your body. I mean, when you first come into sitting, you can feel for the first 8 to 10 minutes the body and the mind kind of feeding each other, kind of like the residue of what has brought you to this place is still zonging, you know? And then there's a point when you feel it begin to go down. Every now and then a thought will, or a body sensation, will bring it back into focus. It's a very fascinating process to watch. Yeah. Yeah. And then there's all this inner and outer sirens. Yes. Yes. Boop! Yes, I think part of it is the intention. You know, you do have to leave your house, you have to leave your... The question is, or the statement is, that nourishing quality, that sense of well-being is so much more easily experienced here or in a dedicated practice group than when we're sitting alone at home. I think, you know, there's a collective intention and there is a support of being in the group, knowing that everybody in this room is motivated by the same intention and is committed and is equally committed. I think there's also a comfort, you know, I consider sometimes, well, you know, what is this person up here doing? Whether I'm sitting there or sitting here, you know, that's often there's a comfort in knowing that there's somebody who is going to say something and make it all make sense. And somehow or other, that there's going to be a leader or a guide or someone out there. You know, I think that provides a sense of comfort to we're conditioned. First by our parents, then by our teachers, to feel good about having somebody out there who knows something, supposedly. So, you know, but I think principally it's that we sit in a group and that we share the intentions. I think those two things are very powerful. But I also have personally the experience, and other people have described it too, that eventually If you have a regular practice at home, it does deepen on its own, and you will find yourself being able to sit for half an hour, 45 minutes, or even an hour, and be very, very powerfully absorbed on your own. Some people invoke a group, even when they're sitting alone, just in their own. But yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yeah.
I have a very interesting thing that happens to me when I wake up in the morning at 5 to sit. And I light the candles on the altar. My cat is nowhere to be found all night long. But when I meditate, she's right here for 45 minutes. Jesse is right here, and they don't move for 45 minutes. And then when I stretch, they're all over me.
I know. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think animals, I adore animals, and I think that they enjoy the privilege of not having the kind of linguistic mind that we have. And maybe for that reason, they're more present, they sense energy, they're more prescient, they're more intuitive, their instincts are sharper. And I think that the miracle is how they recognize the energy of practice. And that's what makes them so special and such wonderful companions for sitting. But, you know, if you think about it, almost all saints are associated with a special relationship with animals. Here we are in San Francisco, the city of St. Francis. And his special association was, of course, with animals. You know, they are. They also provide a connection to us that is so deep, pierces directly into the heart of who we are, more than a lot of people can do. You know, people say it's because they're not judgmental or because they practice unconditional love. I don't know those things about them. They might be sitting there having judgments. And there's times when they don't love us, like when we don't give them treats or when we accidentally step on one. So I don't think it's unconditional love. I think it's animals have a capacity to recognize connectedness. Although there are animals that live alone, that are loners, but they are connected with the elements. And that might be the thing. The fact is, animals are much, much, much more directly and immediately connected with elemental nature than we are. And we, being part of elemental nature, they're very, very connected with us at that place, at that fundamental basic place. And they must love it when we finally try to connect with our elemental nature. That's why they want to hang out there and say, thank God. They're finally chilling. Okay, it's 9 o'clock. Let's just sit for a few minutes and then we'll get excited again.
wanted to thank everybody again for coming out tonight on the rainy evening. And thanks also so much to the 6, 7, 8 people who were standing outside in the rain when I came to open up the church. I was so happy to see so many people here ready to help set up the evening. I wasn't happy to see you all wet, but I was happy to see you standing there to support the Sangha. Thanks so much for that. And just a reminder that the church cost us $150 every week to rent, and the crowd's a little bit smaller tonight, probably because of the rain. But if you're able to, you can offer Donna over on the organ in the basket there to help pay for the rent. And also, we'd like to support Yvonne, the teachings that she's offered us. It's so obvious to me every time I sit with Yvonne that she's practiced so much and that she's practiced very deeply. She has so much wisdom to offer us. So we'd like to support Yvonne for being here and for sharing with us tonight also. That Donna can also go in the basket on the organ bench. And if some people can help clean up, we'd really appreciate that as well. We have to move the chairs over towards the columns, take the cushions back, clean up the tea in the back, and a few other things. So if a few people can stay late and help with that, we'd really appreciate it. Thanks so much. Have a happy new year. Take care. Bye-bye.